Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much. 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. Yes, and we have a very crowded studio this morning. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Did I get a promotion there? Special co-host? I don't think I've ever been introduced that way.
Well, I think you've always been sort of special. Co-host is still a questionable idea.
Try unpaid lackey who fills in.
Every Friday.
I've been carrying you for years now. Rudy said the same thing.
Exactly. Last time you talked with him, I'm sure. Thank you. Good morning. Nice to see you. I haven't seen you in a while.
Good to be here. It's one of those days I was thinking as I was coming in, there's both things to be thank God for and things to really wish that hadn't happened. On the good news front, today's the one-year anniversary of what they call the Miracle on the Hudson,
where spoke about it this
Sullenberg
morning.
Put the plane down in the Hudson River and 150-odd people walked away, no injuries. And on the other hand, everybody's focused on trying to get aid to Haiti, which is it's very sad. Nobody knows how many tens of thousands of people were killed. You won't know for a long time, maybe never know. And I think one of the things is that we've, for many, many years, not helped this country so that the infrastructure, when the natural tragedy struck, the infrastructure just couldn't add anything to it. So you would have had a tragedy anyways, but it could have been a lot worse. And hopefully we won't, when the spades from the headlines, won't forget that we have to make sure countries like this get good government, good schools, good infrastructure, and democracy. And
I was talking earlier about when you see something like this in the total, complete breakdown of a society and a group of people, and then you think about the complexity of a place like New York City or virtually any other place.
Earthquake is one of those things. Excuse me, that we have thought about what would happen if. The bigger buildings are more built in modern times and up to a code that's designed to make sure they stand up in the case of a severe earthquake. Those you don't so much worry about. Debris falling off could happen, but they would stand. Some of these smaller, older buildings that were built 100, 110, 150 years ago, they're smaller. They're not as high, but those are the ones that you worry about. Having said that, OEM works with the police and fire, and we tabletop exercises, and we work on in the field of getting emergency responders to different places. If you had an earthquake of this magnitude right under New York City, there would be a lot of damage. It would not be cataclysmic. But given our size, the number of people that would be killed would be hard to imagine.
Right? We have some guests with us today.
We have the Speaker of the City Council, Christine Quinn, and two of her council members with her, Matthew Eugene, who I've known for a long time. He's been a city councilman for a long time, born in Haiti, a doctor, and Jemani Williams, who was just elected for the first time. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And they're here. Chris actually came up with a great idea, deserves the credit for it. Came yesterday and to show you government can work quickly. She'll tell you what's the...
Madam Speaker?
Well, actually, a member of my staff, I have to give him credit, Jim Karras, came to me yesterday, one of our lawyers, and said we should do a payroll deduction. So city employees, if they want to, could, on their paychecks, check off $1, $10, whatever they want, to the portion of the mayor's fund that's going to be dedicated to Haitian relief. And we're announcing today we're starting that. On the February 5th paychecks, which is the next pay period for four pay periods, city workers will be able to make a donation to Haitian relief funds. And just to put it in perspective, if every city worker for the period this program goes on gives $1, we'll raise $1.2 million to help the Haitian relief funds. People can do this on their payroll check off, or if you have an electronic paycheck, which most of us do now, just go to nyc.gov or the council's webpage. It couldn't be easier, and all of us together can raise a lot of money and send a very big message of support and hope to Haiti. I also just want to thank my colleagues, Dr. Eugene and Councilmember Jemani Williams. They've been doing unbelievable work in their districts in Brooklyn supporting the Haitian community that they represent.
What else is the city involved with?
Well, we have some police and firefighters in one of these emergency response teams, and we were waiting for the federal government to tell us when to go. Yesterday, they called early in the morning. I was at the Office of Emergency Management warehouse where they were getting their kits together because they have to, you know, they have to bring stuff to survive.
They have to
their
bring
own
everything.
Food and water and a tent and a pillow and, you know, whatever, medical stuff. Because there's nothing available there. And they went up to Stewart Air Force Base up on the Hudson, and they're waiting as of late last night. I haven't heard this morning whether they finally got out. They're waiting for the government to tell them to start flying down. The trouble in Port-au-Prince is there's one runway in the airport. It is so full of airplanes, and there's no fuel, so that if they get there and don't have extra fuel, they can't get out. That's the problem here. Everybody wants to help, but the logistics are so complex. And now you're talking about sending in some military because the national police have disappeared, and you have to be able to do that. Councilman Eugene, you want to say something?
Yes, first and foremost, let me thank Ms. Mayor Bloomberg and also Speaker Quinn and for everything that you are doing, the city of New York, for everything that you are doing for my country, for the country where I was born. You know, I was born in Haiti, raised in Haiti. I carry Haiti in my heart and my soul. And I know that Haiti is a country of difficulties. The country was facing already challenges and difficulties. You remember when the country, when Haiti was hit by four tropical storms, we came together not too long ago to try to send relief. Now to see that Haiti going through that again, I'm asking to myself how much the people in Haiti can handle. And I'm so grateful to all of you. You know, yesterday, a gentleman went to my office. He lost the entire family. He passed out. We had to call an ambulance. This is only one story.
Councilman, you must have family members there. Have you heard from them?
Like any other member of the Haitian community, I have family in Haiti, and I'm still waiting to hear from them.
That's the worst part.
Yes. One of my cousins, he flew from New York to Haiti the same day, the morning of the tragedy. And we don't know yet.
It's interesting. We had Commissioner Kelly down there just a few days before the earthquake working with the government, trying to help them pull together their resources and provide protection. And then he comes back, and 2 days later, this happened. Councilman Williams?
We're going through some first, you know, as Councilmember Eugene said, I want to thank the mayor and particularly the speaker. This is just a wonderful idea. It's the type of effective, efficient, cooperative thing that we need to offer. Everybody wants to do something, and this is just fantastic, and I applaud it. I know everybody wants to give supplies and things of that nature, and we're trying to encourage people not to do that right now. The infrastructure doesn't exist to get it to them. What they need is money, and to organizations that are reputable, not someone who's down the corner raising money, not a corner store or a friend, but reputable organizations. So this is wonderful. I mean, I'd like to pledge $100 each paycheck myself, starting when that begins, and I hope that's an impetus for all city workers to do something similar, because this is just fantastic. And just like the council member, we have just many Haitians in my district. There was one yesterday, we were able to get him highlighted on NBC. He came to us at a community meeting, said he lost his mother, his sister, his niece, his grandmother. One of his relatives was waiting there with no ambulance and can't get any help. He just came here 4 months ago, and we're trying to see how we can get him back. And I like to highlight those, just like the ones that Councilmember Eugene said, because when we hear the numbers, sometimes we get lost in the numbers. We got to make sure that we keep the faces to those numbers. This is going to happen. This person is going to happen 50,000 times or 100,000 times, and it's very, very important. So we want everyone to make concerted efforts, but please, we want to make them to be effective. Like issues like this.
This will also be a months and months and months in being resolved, and possibly years and years to be resolved.
And I just want to, again, for any city worker that's listening, this starts immediately with the pay period that starts Sunday. This will go on for 2 months, and you just go to nyc.gov and donate. And like you said, John, this is going to go on for months, if not years. So the money we can raise right now through these easy donations from your paycheck will help in the long run get the country restabilized and moving forward.
If necessary, will this be reinstituted if you find the need?
Absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely something we can revisit. The good thing about this is, given that most of our paychecks are electronic, and that the council and the mayor's office work very well together, we were able to put this in place literally in less than a day People just need to go to nyc.gov and they can help. And what New Yorkers want to do, we know, is help. And this is a very easy, focused, and effective way to do it.
You know, people were talking about how many Haitian Americans there are in New York City. Estimates are something like 125,000, and they tend to be in two areas, in Brooklyn, really in Flatbush and the surrounding neighborhoods, and in Queens and Cambria Heights and the surrounding areas in Southeast Queens. And an awful lot of the Haitians that are here are college graduates, but graduate degrees. If you go look in our hospitals, it's fascinating. There's a whole bunch of Haitian doctors who work here now in our hospitals. They're great doctors, and we need them. Without that, we wouldn't be able to provide the care. The trouble is, there aren't enough doctors in Haiti. You know, when these doctors get a good education, unfortunately, too many of them,
they have the opportunity to come in.
Sure. I mean, you don't blame them, but it's one of the problems Haiti, any country has. If it's not a good place to live, people leave, and those that leave are those who are probably most valuable. They have the resources to leave. And so, you know, you saw that in Ireland 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when the Irish economy was terrible and they lost a whole generation of young, educated people. Then the economy got better. Some went back. Oh, they stopped. But now it's happening again. The same thing's happened in Haiti.
All right.
One thing you mentioned that the mayor had brought up before we were on the air was that one of the reasons this is so catastrophic is because the structure wasn't there before. We neglected that country in the Western Hemisphere for very, very long, too long. And 7.0 will rock anyone. So you can't prevent who dies that day, but you can prevent who dies later. And they're having difficulty doing that because the infrastructure wasn't there. And I think a lot of the Western Hemisphere has a lot to do
with that. Well, a lot of people say this will be an opportunity as well as a tragedy.
Also, yes. What makes the situation worse is the lack of infrastructure.
Yeah.
And I've been advocating, we have been raising awareness about the need of basic infrastructure for Haiti. After the last tragedy, we said that we're going to work together, continue to work together. But I hope this time we will come together and work. After sending the relief in Haiti, we continue to build the infrastructure in Haiti. What I want to say to my brothers and sisters in the Haitian community, I know they came to me, they're asking me what the city is doing, what we are doing. I want to let you know, I know that you are brave people, resilient people, you want to face your difficulty with pride, but you can see that you are not alone. We city council members, we people in New York of Woodville, we are working hard. And I'm telling you, we are working very hard on your behalf. We don't sleep. We don't rest. And you can see for yourself, the mayor is taking the leadership, the speaker is taking the leadership. All of us are city council members. We are following. We are working hard to send relief in Haiti.
All right, well, gentlemen, lady, thank you very much for coming, and I think it's a great idea, and I'm glad that we could help a little bit get the word out, so thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Just want to say, nous pas oublier, we will not forget you.
All right, very good. We're going to take a break here, 21 minutes after 8 o'clock, coming back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at WOR. 26 minutes after 8 o'clock, good morning to you all. Friday, Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here.
Co-host. I've never been one before.
My Friday co-host.
I'm so impressed with that.
Let me get your reaction to Judge Nicholas Garofis, who said that the NYFD's tests are biased.
Well, I think the judge erred. And in looking back at what the city did over the years, I don't think they deliberately tried to be biased against any group. The real problem in the fire department has always been who applies. If you don't apply, you don't take the tests and you don't get in. And if you take a look at the police department, the diversity of those who want to become police officers is dramatically different than the diversity of people who want to become firefighters. Nick Scapetta worked so hard for the last 8 years on this, speaking at schools and student groups and after-school programs and ever, and we've made some real progress because the latest list that we compiled has about 35% minorities at all levels of the list. The way the list works is fundamentally they have this test, you take it, the results are there, and then for 4 years the agency picks from the top of the list and works down, and they call and, you know, John, you're number 7 on the list, you want the job, oh no, I just decided to move or something else, so not everybody takes the jobs. So if you're at the bottom of the list, you really don't have much of a chance. And lately, because we've had almost no attrition, we really haven't been hiring new firefighters. We just don't need more We can't afford more. I mean, you can always put another firehouse in and it would always make the world safer, but we just don't have the money to do that. So I don't think the city for all those years did discriminate, and I think that Nick worked very hard to get a more diverse group to take the test. And remember, when I came into office in 2002, we had to replace 343 firefighters overnight, and a lot of others who chose to retire after the terrible tragedy of 9/11. So we worked off the old list. We hired some experts. We created a new test, not because I thought the old one necessarily discriminated, but I thought it was time to update the test. You know, skills change and whatever, and the rules change. And we did that, and the new test has given us a more diverse group, although the more diverse group, I think, is probably not really so much. It's partly the test may be different. Maybe that's one of the reasons, but it's a much different group applying today. People know this is a great job. In the olden days, the reason it was always a father-son passed-down business wasn't so much that the kid sat at the table and the father taught him that you put number 3 foam on a number 7 oil fire. It was the kid saw his father had a great job who could make a real difference in firefighters love their job, typically, not all, but most. And so the kid said, well, I want to do that too. I want to follow Dad. It's going to be a great job. And if you weren't part of that family, you didn't really see it. But Nick Scapetta's outreach really expanded the knowledge of how good a job it was to lots of others, and I think that's one of the things.
What's the result of this ruling by the judge?
Nobody knows. Long time, probably, before you find out. But the bottom line is, the first thing that I will do, and I will fight as long as I can, as hard as I can, we are going to have the best people so that when you're in your house and there's a fire, you want the best person available, the best trained, the most courageous, the most intelligent, because you never know when you come through that door what it's going to be. And I've always thought that, you know, since you don't know, you just, first criteria is you want the smartest people you can get and the bravest people you can get. And that man or woman with a hose or an axe coming through that door to save your life, I don't care what his background or where he comes from, that shouldn't be the criteria. We don't want to discriminate. In fact, our police department is very diverse, as many of the city agencies, and fire is getting there. I don't know how long it's going to take to work out something or what we can agree to. In the end, courts can order you to do anything. We've just got to explain to the judge. We're talking about people's lives here. And we have a new commissioner now, Nick, after 42 years of public services, retired. Sal Cassano, a 40-year veteran, Vietnam vet. I think he's got like 5 decorations for bravery in the fire department. It's another one of these commissioners that have held every rank from the bottom to the top.
Which is actually fairly unusual.
Well, we have fire, police, sanitation, and I think he skipped one, parks. Labor might be too. I'd have to ask Hanley. He probably started at the bottom. They don't have ranks so much, but mm-hmm. He started as a junior guy and worked his way up. So it's not that unusual in this city, believe it or not.
But in some cities it is. A lot of people come from other areas and they plug in.
Well, we'd have almost no turnover at the commissioner or deputy mayor level. You know, you have some. And we've changed maybe close to a third. I have to go back and look at the numbers. The people who wanted to retire, and we've moved new people in, and that's good. That's a reasonable amount of change to keep the pot boiling and new ideas and not let anybody get tired, but at the same time to have the continuity that you want from, you know, look, our fire department, we had an announcement last week or the week before, lowest number of deaths ever from fires for the year, for an 8-year period, fastest response times ever. You know, this is working.
And look at that. When you add those numbers and statistics that you just did to the crime statistics, we are finding ourselves in a safer place.
Well, but there's a number that measures that. Life expectancy. Life expectancy in the last 8 years has gone up by 15 months in our city, a year and a quarter. The average person, think about it, lives a year and a quarter longer, and it is lower murder rate, fewer deaths by fire, fewer traffic accidents. We're safer than we've ever been on the streets. Smoking, 10,000 fewer people dropped out of heart attacks or whatever the numbers are. You go right down the list. All these things add up to you living longer and the less chance of you being injured, because you want quality of life to be good as well.
All right, let's take a break here. We went long in our first one with our guests here, so let me take a break on the half hour. Let me also remind you that we're going to carve out a few minutes for you. If you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, it is 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. Call Mike Figliola right now and get your place in line. It's 27 before 8 o'clock. Let's go check on some before 9 o'clock. Let's go check on some news with Joe. Here we go with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Again, don't forget your questions, 800-321-0710. Straight ahead, get in line right now, 800-321-0710. Mr. Mayor, I talked this morning about the president's call for taxes on our banks and Wall Street. I know yesterday you came out pretty strongly that this is not a good thing for New York.
Well, it's not a good thing for New York. You know, New York depends. We've tried to diversify, and we've done a good job of that, but we still are dependent on one major industry, and that's finance. And keep in mind, it employs tens of thousands of people. The average person who works in finance, Wall Street, makes $70,000 a year. They're not the people with the multi-million-dollar bonuses. But the multi-million-dollar bonus babies pay their taxes here. That's how our police get paid, firefighters get paid, teachers get paid. Sanitation workers, correction workers. I mean, we need to have that industry be here and do well here. And the danger is that some of them will move, or you reduce the amount of money they have to pay out to, and so the tax, the multiplier effect doesn't work here. Hey, I'm sympathetic to the president. You have to balance the budget. I've criticized Washington, more the Congress, for spending money we don't have. But on the other hand, you've got to be careful. If raising taxes on one group results in less tax revenue in total, that's not something you can do. Now, people aren't going to give up their American citizenship, but companies can move some of their business overseas very easily. And, you know, that's what happened. That's why London is such a financial center, because they improved increased regulation here, and a lot of companies started moving the business.
I read an article the other day that Washington, D.C., banks and financial institutions are moving in that direction because of its center to where things economic emanate from these days.
You mean moving to Washington?
Washington, D.C.
No, they're not going to do that. The Accela does have a pretty good shuttle, so does JetBlue and United to get down there. But you can move business overseas. London, I've talked to the mayor of London. He's petrified. Companies there will move to Geneva. I had a long conversation with Richie Daley, the great mayor of Chicago, day before yesterday, and Chicago is very dependent on, just as New York, there's a Wall Street in Chicago, and more the commodities business, but the same kind of thing. There are cities, Charlotte, North Carolina, one bank, L.A., much more dependent, incidentally, on the Wall Street kind of company than New York is. Our diversification has reduced our dependence somewhat. And what's really surprising is Tim Geithner said a few weeks ago that with the repayment of the TARP monies, with the interest they earned, and with the profits they are making in selling the warrants they got from these companies, the government is actually going to make money on this. So all of a sudden to come along and say, oh, well, we have to recoup our money, Tim's already said it was going to be profitable. And, you know, Tim's a very smart guy, so if he said it, he's certainly pushed the numbers. What everybody in this city needs is we need our senators and congressmen to fight to make, if we're going to, the country, I understand the country needs money, and they should, and we're all going to have to pay. We want to have the services, but it should be broadly spread out throughout the country and not just on one industry. If Congress tried to tax the oil industry, you can imagine what the Texas legislators would do. They'd be breaking down the doors in Washington right now, or the automobile business in Michigan. I'm sympathetic. I think we should have helped the General Motors and Chrysler. Just too much involved. Maybe they should never have gotten into that situation. It was Congress that sort of helped them down the rosy path of not enforcing standards that would have let us be able to compete on a world stage. But nevertheless, we helped those, and Michigan delegation wouldn't stand for taxing the automobile companies, or California delegation for IT. Well, you know, where is our New York delegation? And I'm going to call and talk to them about trying to just spread the pain. I'm willing to pay. New York should be paying its fair share. it shouldn't be the scapegoat and the only one.
All right. Do you think that our New York delegation will react?
I hope so. What else do you want me to say?
Okay.
Look, they've got to understand that the voters and the citizens that they represent don't want to be unfairly prevailed upon. And if you tax Wall Street, you're taxing all of our firefighters, police officers, and teachers, because we just cannot afford to keep all of them working if our tax revenues go down, and that's what would happen. So it may not be direct, but it is clearly just as specific.
The state has its own budgetary problems, which directly relate and reflect on your
similar kind of thing. Yeah. You know, the state, though, problem is even worse from their point of view, because you're not going to move. It's hard to move out of America, and virtually nobody would give up their American citizenship to reduce their taxes. But it's very easy to move out of a city or a state. And, you know, Florida is out there trying to get all our industries to move down there. They have no inheritance tax, virtually no income tax. Connecticut has these development places. They want to get our businesses to move over there. And what the state legislature did the last time is they raised taxes on what they say are the rich. Well, if you look at the definition of rich, it's an awful lot of people, and they're all in New York City. I love it. They passed laws that apply only to cities of 1 million or more. Well, we're the only city, okay? So that's just right in New York City for it. And if they cut back the monies that they send to us, we're going to have to lay off people, because in the end, city government is simply we take money and we hire people and it provides services. It's a personal service business, if you will. The governor, I keep defending the governor because at least he's standing up and saying, I don't agree with a lot of the things he wants, but he does have the courage to stand up and say, this is what I do. He puts out his budget on January 19th, I think it is.
Next week.
And we have to put out a preliminary budget. Ours doesn't really have to get done till the end of June, and the state's doesn't have to get done till the end of March. We will, at the end of January, put in the budget the effect of whatever the governor proposes. Now, it may be great for New York City. It may be terrible for New York City. I don't know. I haven't talked to him. He's got enough problems. And he knows where I'm coming from and who I have to defend. And then it's going to be up to the legislature. But, you know, a lot of this, they say, well, they're going to cut back and we should say thank you. They take a lot of our money, they give a little bit back, and they expect us to say thank you. This is our money, folks. And New York City, no matter what the political posturing is upstate, New York City, with 40% of the population, pays 50% of the taxes.
The salt controversy, salt content.
I'm fascinated by this. Number one, this is being done around the world. What they've done in England is they convinced the packaged goods manufacturers to reduce the salt content in stages over 5 years. And if you do that, people don't notice it.
Wean people off.
The salt is not the salt you put on your eggs with a salt cellar. That's trivial compared to the salt that's in everything that you buy that's packaged. And a lot of the packaged good companies are taking the salt out. It sells. It turns out that people want, they look at the sodium content in the label and they want less. And nobody's suggesting that we force them to do it. We just are trying to encourage people to eat healthier, encourage manufacturers to make better products. There's no question that every reputable doctor says you should not reduce your salt content. And it's particularly onerous because as you go down the economic ladder, people tend to eat more salt. There's just less knowledge of what's good and bad for you, and more of a reliance on fast food that tends to have more sodium in it. So this is purely recommendation, information. Somebody sent me a really nasty email in the middle of the night.
I can't believe it's unbelievable. Sent nasty email.
And, you know, about you shouldn't demand. And this one went on and on about we should tell people. Well, that's all we're doing, is telling them. But life expectancy here
is... It goes back to what you were talking about
earlier.
You
got it.
Yeah, absolutely. So would you tell me what... I was trying to figure out exactly how this works. Your time bank idea, where you volunteer and get some sort of credit for volunteering?
The whole idea is to get people to volunteer. And we have a chief service officer now, Diane Billings Buford, and we've signed up thousands of volunteers and organizations. We're trying to match them with organizations with people that can help. You know, you may be suited to help a kid, mentor a kid. You may be suited to help go around and get elderly people to take their flu shots. You may be suitable to plant a tree or paint a roof. I mean, a lot of things you can volunteer. People want to do it. They just don't know quite how to do it. And one of the things that we've done, and I'm going to be in Chicago on Monday to announce the winners, we have, thanks to the Rockefeller Foundation and some others, we had grants. There were 50 cities that apply, and we'll announce the 10 winners on Monday, and each of them is going to get $200,000 to hire a service chief service officer who will coordinate their volunteer efforts over the next year. And for some of these cities, a small city, $200,000 is a lot of money for New York City. You know, just given the scale, it is small. It's real money, but it is small. But there's going to be 10 very happy cities in this country. Not New York. We have our own. We can
pay
for
our own, right?
Yeah, but it's. And I just wanted to thank Judy Roden and the Rockefeller Foundation for doing this.
You're involved in that kind of thing very, very deeply. Have you, with the economic environment, has there been a reduction of volunteerism?
No. Well, it's a little hard to measure because you always, between Thanksgiving and New Year's,
get a
big jump. And what we keep saying is we need people to work in soup kitchens all year long, not just at this time of the year. But no, I mean, it seems that the number of volunteers keeps growing. That may be partially because
more people have time.
Well, we started this NYC service. It was Patty Harris's idea after Barack Obama called for a nation of service, and she said, "Okay, the president says this. Why don't we do something and let's be the leader, which New York should be in all these things?" And we've done it, and there's an enormous number of volunteers that and you don't have to do it. So you know, I don't need a nasty email about it. Don't volunteer. But these are people who do, and organizations that need them, and it really makes a difference. And incidentally, our economy, you know, you say in tough times, and there clearly are people still getting hurt, and we've got to work hard at that. But on the other hand, there are more people working in tourism today than at any time in history.
In the city.
Think about that. Our tourism business is off. These announcements came out while you were away, but our tourism business is off like 3.9%. In other cities, every other city is double digit. Our hotel occupancy is greater than it's been in a few years. Room rates are still low, but they are creeping back up. Broadway's having another record season. So, you know, there's still plenty of people that need help, and that's what we've got to focus on. On the other hand, it's not all doom and gloom. We are doing somewhat better, and we've got to keep working hard. And the ways you do it is bring down crime and improve the schools and clean the streets and help the culturals. That gets all of this stuff coming here. And don't overtax the people that are creating the jobs here. I'm worried about people getting pushed out and taking the jobs that they create with them.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. We've got some phone calls, 800-321-0710. We'll get to your questions in just a minute.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling and with you at 5 minutes before 9 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, some questions here. Let's go to Francis. You're up first, Francis. Right to the question, please.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was calling in regard to the police department.
Yep.
My son is on the list and would like to know when the next police class will be starting. Can't seem to get an answer or a call.
Well, the reason that you can't get an answer is we don't know. It all depends on what the city's ability to afford more cops is, and that depends on tax revenues and how we can move monies around, what the state does to us, what the federal government does to us, and also attrition. Cops are not retiring the way they were before. So we just swore in a class the other day, a small class, but we swore in a class last week and the beginning of this week, and hopefully we'll have one this summer. So tell your son, you know, keep his eye on it, and it's a great career in the greatest police department in the world, and hopefully he'll get onto it and make a difference in the city.
Francis, thank you very much. Martin, what's your question for Mayor Bloomberg?
Yes, just like you're mentioning about the soup in the, you know, the salt coming out of the soup gradually throughout the world, how you're going to be trying to do that in New York City. People, just be aware that by taking a consensus like that, Removing salt without your knowledge is just like your rights around the world being eroded by a progressive government.
Well, it isn't without your knowledge, because on every packaged goods, there's a label telling you just how much salt. So you can pick one, the high salt, the high sodium food, or a low sodium food. Our objective is to tell you what's in it so that you can make your informed decision. That's the basis of capitalism and democracy. Certainly you can't object to that. And what happens is a lot of the food companies want to find ways to reduce salt because more people buy it. They'll do whatever is in their own commercial interest, and that's fine. And so if the public has the information, they'll vote with their pocketbook.
I certainly know that Campbell's came out and said that they were going to keep it the way it was.
The other thing is the salt content in packaged foods over the last decade or so has gone up 30% without them telling you. So, you know, if they don't tell you on the way down, on the way up, not telling the way down, sort of the same kind of thing.
Gotcha.
But they do tell you, in all fairness, with the label.
It's there. All right, Paul, good morning. You've got the mayor. Right to your question, please.
Mr. Mayor, the area around City Field was supposed to be developed. Is that still a plan?
You betcha, and it's actually going pretty well. It is 62 acres. Now, keep in mind, this is right in the heart of Queens, so it's very valuable land. But also, it is an old industrial park. So this is a land where the ground has been contaminated for many, many years, and we've got to clean that up. The council, city council, passed our plan to clean it up and revitalize it, and we're going to have thousands of housing units and jobs. The results from the private sector, we've gone out to the private sector and asked them, we've had requests for qualifications, yet it's the first step, and we've received 29 responses, which is much more than we thought, and this year out will go the RFP for development proposals for the southwest portion of the site. Our Economic Development Corporation has already made deals with over 75% of the property owners that we now control the land, and we're going to continue to reach out to businesses and other property owners throughout the Willits Point and try to negotiate fair acquisition agreements. But this is a project that's going to get built out over the next 10 years. What we're doing now is developing the infrastructure, cleaning up the land, putting in sewers, putting in water, electricity, that sort of thing. Then when the market needs it, the developers don't have to go through a long process of approvals. They have as a right to do it, and the infrastructure they need is going to already be in place. And we're certainly not walking away from it. And I happen to think that the market is slowly turning here, and you will see more development over the next couple of years. I'm really optimistic about it. Now, you know, I'm not a developer, but when I talk to developers, they more and more are getting optimistic.
62 acres of commercial space.
In the heart of Queens. This is
revenue for the city.
Absolutely. It's going to be great for everybody, create an enormous number of jobs and facilities we need, and that whole area, which incidentally they started to rezone that in for the 1964 World's Fair and couldn't get it done. We finally got it done.
All right, the 64 2010.
But it's done. I can't help with the past. I'm just telling it's done now. Come on.
All right, Mr.
And the city council deserves a lot of credit for
that. All
right,
Mr. Co-host, I'll see you next time around. All right. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, have yourself a wonderful weekend. Everybody, you as well. We will be back on Monday. Some of you will have the day off, but if you got to get up and got to know what's going on, this is the place. Have a good one.
You just heard John Gambling. New York's best news talk continues next.